Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, guys? Week number 12, almost complete, because as many of you know, I am going to the KISS show on Monday to see them in person for the last time, because this is their final tour. They're hanging it up. And actually, I'm feeling quite lucky at this point because Paul Stanley, one of the frontmen for the band, has been sick with the flu for the last several days. And it was getting kind of chippy there as to whether or not he was going to make it to the show on Monday. But our fears were put to rest yesterday when they did play in Indianapolis, not far from where I am now. They had the day off today on Sunday, so they'll be good to go for us on Monday to be able to make the show. Man, I've had these tickets for 8.5 months, man. I did not want to have that show canceled because it wasn't ever going to get made up. If they cancel it, they're finishing next Friday or next Saturday on the 2nd. In MSG, that's going to be it. No makeup shows for the ones that got canceled. It's a raw deal, but it is what it is, unfortunately. So I will not be reviewing the Bears-Vikings game for this episode. I will fold my review of that, obviously, into the Bears-Vikings review episode that will come out anywhere from Tuesday afternoon to Tuesday night, depending on when we get back and all that kind of stuff. So it might even be pushed back to Wednesday morning. So it might just be a busy week as far as I'm just running it all. But actually, we got the bye week after this game, so I'm not really going to need to hustle too much, am I? Because I don't have review episodes or previews to get cranked out. Actually, what am I saying? I still have to do the NFL show, dummy. Anyway, it's been a crazy weekend. It's finally come to a close as far as most of the NFL schedule is concerned. As I'm recording this, the Sunday night game is taking place right now, so I will fold that into the all-out blitz later on, which actually we're gonna reverse course because that's just what we're doing this week, and we're going to start with the pick six instead of the all-out blitz to give the game time to finish before we wrap things up. So let's go ahead and get started. This is the Week 12 review episode of the Fourth Phase, so let's get to it. Welcome to the Fourth Phase, presented by Bears Talk Underground and Sports Drink Media. And now, your host, Larry D. What a week of games, man. The entire league is playing this weekend. Obviously, the Bears-Vikings wrapping it up all tomorrow night on Monday. But, you know, it starts off with the Packers and the Lions, and for the second time, the Lions fall behind early and are trying to come back, only this time they didn't pull it off. Spoiler alert, that's basically my all-out blitz review of the game. But the reason that I bring it up here is because, they thought it was cool to come back and, you know, piss all over my team's effort. But they also decided to do it to me, they being the Lions, when I went all in on the Lions. I put all, see, my strategy was to stack up my points over the weekend because I thought every matchup on Thanksgiving and Black Friday I thought was a lopsided game. You have Detroit at 8-2 versus 4-6 Green Bay. You have San Francisco that's playing like a buzzsaw right now against the Seahawks, who are kind of limping their way into this game. You have the Cowboys against the Commanders. That's not a matchup at all. Division rival or not. You know, and the funny thing is, you all agreed with me. Everybody did the same thing that I did as far as, like, my picks. And then finally, the Black Friday game, I thought, you know, the Jets might have a little bit of a shot with their defense and everything, but unless the defense was going to be scoring the points, then I didn't really think they had a shot. So I went 16 on Detroit, 15 on Dallas, 14 on San Francisco, and then 13 on Miami. And that strategy worked perfect if it weren't for the goddamn Lions, man. What? I mean, and it started early. Like, the Lions never led in the game, and it's just like, this is how this weekend's going to start? This is how this is going to go? You know, it's like, because my dinners were on Friday and Saturday, so we didn't eat, quote-unquote, Thanksgiving dinner on Thanksgiving Day. We just watched a shitload of football. And, yeah, this is how it started with our, you know, division rivals, the team that just beat us in an epic comeback that they would not stop mentioning throughout the game. They did kindly by not mentioning the Bears by name, but they kept referring to, you know, Detroit being down and how they pulled this off in, you know, 3 minutes, the you know, 4 days ago against, you know, on Sunday and blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, that was aggravating as hell. And then the rest of the weekend went exactly the way that I thought it would. The Cowboys smashed the Commanders, the 49ers ran Seattle off their own field, and then Miami and the Jets went about as well as I thought it was going to on Black Friday. So going into Sunday, I was 3-1, but that one loss cost me 16 points. So I wasn't the only one who went all in on the Lions, but, you know, everybody picked the Lions, so everybody lost that game. So in a way, it makes me feel a little bit better, but, man, what a crappy way to get things started. The game I was most sure of. I was most sure, especially after they smashed Green Bay in Lambeau on Thursday night, that they would just do it again on Thanksgiving and everything. But if you want to give the Bears credit for anything, I guess they wore the Lions out because they didn't have enough to come back against the Packers on Sunday, and it cost me and pretty much everybody a ton of points in the standings this week. So, yeah, very disappointing, but some a lot of fun games, some really good ones in the pick six. I ended up doing very well with my games that I chose to feature this week. But, you know, a lot of divisional matchups, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati this week, the Rams and the Cardinals, the Chiefs and the Raiders, you know, and like I said, the Ravens and the Chargers are playing right now, getting ready to wrap things up. They're already in the fourth quarter as I'm talking about this, so... But a lot of good games, so let's go ahead and dive into our pick six and get this thing underway. Pick six for week number 12. We'll only be doing five games in the pick six because the sixth game I did in the pick six preview was the Bears and the Vikings, and I chose that one, as I told you guys on Thursday, that... biases aside, as a football fan, I was genuinely interested to see which Bears team was going to show up for that Vikings game on Monday. Would it be the team that's kind of picks up where they left off from the first 56 minutes of that Lions game, or would it be the team that's still jet-lagged from the 4 minutes of an ass-kicking that they took from Detroit at the end, blowing that game? So mentally, physically, I really wanted to see how that was how that would shake out. And, you know, so we won't be talking about that one because they're not playing yet. They don't play until tomorrow. So we will begin on Thanksgiving night. But the one Thanksgiving game that I featured in the pick six this week was the San Francisco 49ers at the Seattle Seahawks. And this thing was like utter domination for the 49ers from the outset. I mean, really from the beginning, they just marched right down the field and put one in the end zone. It was a Debo Samuel touchdown run from about 4 yards out or so, and it was basically off and running from there. And the real story of this game was field position. Field position, field position because the 49ers had all of it and the Seattle Seahawks had none of it. I mean, it was just an utter, just, it was a disaster for Seattle. Every time they got the ball, they were deep in their own territory. And I was watching the, I didn't watch the game on Thursday night, but I watched the condensed highlights, and I kept waiting for them to show like a graphic of some kind that showed what Seattle's average field position start was. Because I know that the 49ers were at like the 40-yard line just about every time they had the ball. And, you know, even after a great return from the Seahawks to get to the San Francisco 32 yard line, the 49ers shut that down and settled for a field goal. So it's 7-3, and that's how the first quarter ended. Second quarter was all 49ers. They won that quarter 17 to nothing. They're up 24-3 at the half. I mean, but just to give you an indication, after the 49ers get the ball back from the field goal, they get a couple of first downs and end up punting the ball back to Seattle inside their own 10-yard line. And then Geno Smith damn near trips his way to a safety. And I ran the play back at least half a dozen times, and I couldn't tell, because that's the only angle that we got in the highlights, but I couldn't tell whether he tripped over his own feet or if he got his feet tangled with the running back that ran across his face. So I don't know if it's his own fault or if it was just, you know, the running back trying to squeeze himself in there a little too early or something like that. But he ends up falling down at like the 2-yard line, and, you know, it was like, well, that drive is done. So, but the ensuing drive for the 49ers after they punt the ball away goes right back to, you know, the 49ers go right back down the field. You know, they punted 9 plays, 45 yards. So they started in Seattle territory on that drive. You know, this time it was another short McCaffrey, another short touchdown run. This time McCaffrey instead of Deebo Samuel. You know, and it was just like, and when I was taking the notes, I was like, the 49ers had outstanding field position the entire first half. This was the theme for the entire game. The Seahawks started with garbage field position for just about every game or every drive in this game. The one where Geno Smith trips, number one, that was on third down, and it was third and 16 from their own 1-yard line, and yeah, it was no bueno. I mean, I take that back. It was second and 7, and that's when he falls down and gets sacked at the 1. So yeah, it was second and 7 at the 10 when he drops back. He trips over his own feet or gets his feet tangled with the running back, falls down, gets touched at the 1 for a 9-yard sack. You know, they got nothing on third down, had to punt the ball away, and that's where the 49ers started at the Seattle 45-yard line, and it only took them 9 plays to get the 1-yard McCaffrey run. But this is how it went. Everything that could go well for the 49ers pretty much did, and everything that could go wrong for the Seahawks pretty much did, because after they scored the touchdown, Geno Smith throws an interception on the second play of the drive, and the 49ers had the ball in Seattle territory again, but that's where actually the Seahawks kind of cinched down on defense and forced a punt. But again, they're punting from the Seattle 44, and the punter was outstanding because he pins it back at the 2 for Seattle. So, I mean, it's just, it was bananas like that the whole time. They end up punting the ball away again. They got 9 yards on 3 plays, punt the ball back. San Francisco starts at their own 42, so basically right at midfield again. Charges right down the field, 8 plays, 56 yards, another touchdown. This time it was McCaffrey from 8 yards out to make it 21-3, and then they added a field goal just before halftime for it to be 24-3. So, yeah, it's 24-3. It's, like I said, everything that could go right for San Francisco did. field position, forcing turnovers, quarterback sacks himself, the whole nine yards, and everything that could go wrong for Seattle did. You know, Geno Smith sacks himself. Field position average was like their own 7 yard line to start just about every drive. You know, Geno Smith, actually their best looking drive of the first half ends in a missed field goal. So it's like after the 49ers kicked their last field goal to go up 24-3, they actually put a 5-play, 41-yard drive together that got down to the Seattle 35. But Jason Myers, for the second time in 5 days, misses a 50-plus-yard field goal. He missed the one on Sunday that lost them a game to the Rams. Missed another one. I mean, it wouldn't put much of a dent into the score, but it's points on the board. And, you know, when you're struggling that much, every bit counts. It could have meant, you know, some kind of momentum they were carrying into the halftime. But nope, kick was wide. Come away with nothing. Started with the ball in the second half. Got 7 plays and 33 yards, but that didn't go well. But you thought there might be some kind of spark, because on the first drive for the 49ers, A batted ball, or a tip pass, actually, led to a pick six for Jordan Brooks, the linebacker or edge rusher for the Seahawks. Made it 24-10. So they're still down 2 scores, but there's the spark. They got a spark. And instead, and especially since the 49ers went 3-and-out on the ensuing drive after that. So they get the touchdown. They get the 3-and-out on the next drive. They come out. And Seattle's best drive of the game, which included this crazy one-handed Jaxon Smith-Njigba catch to extend the drive. 14 plays, 78 yards, 6.5 minutes off the clock. Get all the way down to the 49er 12. Had to settle for a field goal. Yeah, it's 24-13. All of that, 14 plays, multiple first downs. On the drive, they nearly ate up the entire second, a huge chunk of the third quarter with this drive, and they come away with virtually nothing. With virtually nothing. Then they trade punts. San Francisco punts the ball, Seattle punts it, and then the dagger of the night was Brock Purdy, finding Brandon Ayuk for about a 28-yard touchdown pass with about 7.5 minutes to go in the game, made it 31-13, and that was your final score for the game. You know, Seattle put together an 11-play, 41-yard drive that ate up 3.5 minutes of what was left of the clock, but ended up with a turnover on downs. I mean, the 49er offense played really, really well in this football game, but in reality, the kudos has to go to the defense and to the special teams. The Seahawks were held to 14 first downs, 3-for-11 on third down, only 220 yards of total offense. They got 2 turnovers out of the Seahawks. You know, it just they really just shut the Seahawks down. I mean, and actually, it looked a lot worse on film than what I'm looking, because this. It's not good, but it's not awful either, what I'm looking at here. 3-for-11 is definitely not great. But, you know, 220 yards, yeah, that's a pretty bad day on offense. But, you know, it looked a lot worse on film. I mean, I'm actually surprised it is that much after what I saw in the highlights, because it was Geno Smith running for his life, Geno Smith getting sacked, and the 49ers basically doing whatever they wanted on offense. And, they sacked Smith 6 times in this game. That sounds like a low number after the highlights that I watched. But, the 49ers were my pick. I put a big fat 15-point total on them, and I got it right. New Orleans at Atlanta, somehow a game between a 5-5 Saints and a 4-6 Atlanta Falcons team was for first place in the NFC South, which just tells you you shouldn't really worry about anyone coming out of the South in the playoffs this year. Although, with what the Falcons did in the running game, that could carry some weight in the playoffs. But it all comes down to who they end up playing up against, who they end up against in the playoffs. Now the Falcons were riding with Desmond Ridder because Taylor Heinicke, was it a hamstring or a groin, something like that, that took him out of last week's game. So Ritter's back in the lineup for better or for worse, and this game just made no sense to me. It made no sense to me whatsoever because the Saints basically did whatever they wanted on offense in this game. Because the Derek Carr and the offense going up and down the field, up and down the field, up and down the field, they ended up with over 400 yards of offense, 444 yards of total offense in this game. 6 of 14 on third down, 148 yards rushing, you know, but they didn't get into the end zone one time. So they basically, the Saints could do whatever they wanted on offense, but actually score touchdowns. Because they had 5 field goals in this game and actually could have had a 6th, but the kicker missed at the end of the game to try to make it a 1-score game and pray for a miracle onside. But, you know, Carr was throwing the ball all over the place to Olave, Taysom Hill, etc. You know, but the theme for the day was like the Saints could not finish their drives and they settled for field goals every single time. You know, in their second drive of the game, they were moving right along, just chunking the ball down the field like they did on their opening drive where they settled for a field goal. And it looked like they were about to take, like, early control of the game when Carr got picked off by Jesse Bates at the 8-yard line. You know, they're deep in Atlanta territory. Carr throws the pick. I have no idea what he thought was going to happen with this pass. And it's not so much about Jesse Bates picking it off. It's that his placement of the ball, he would have been lucky if his guy caught it at all, because it was a running back coming out of the backfield, and the way that Carr threw it, it was going to be behind the running back, which would have hit the DB that was covering the running back in the chest. So, I mean, I think that pass gets picked off either way, but it just so happens that Jesse Bates saw it the whole time. He saw Carr staring down the running back. He runs right across Carr's face, picks it off. 92 yards later, it's, you know, Bates takes it to the house and steals the momentum 7-3. And with the way that the Saints were playing offense, or actually the way they were finishing on offense, you know, the Falcons scored touchdowns, the Saints scored field goals, which means for every one time your opponent scores, you have to score 3 times, you know, 2 to stay in the game, 3 to actually be ahead. So, I mean, the 3-to-1 ratio is not going to work. There's just not enough time on the clock to pull that off. So, you know, later on, after the Saints get another field goal, it's 7-6. But Bijan Robinson, I guess Arthur Smith wasn't full of it when he said he was going to give more work to Bijan Robinson this week. Robinson had 60 carries for 91 yards and a touchdown. Got that touchdown in the second quarter to make it 14. To 6. The Saints returned the favor to the Falcons when the Honey Badger, Matthew, picks off Ridder in the end zone at the end of the first half, made it 14-9 at the half after another Saints field goal, of course. But and then Ridder threw another interception to Matthew in the third quarter. The Saints were heading in to score, only to have the ball punched out of Taysom Hill's hands. He did he was in at quarterback for that play, decides to run it up the middle, got a decent, you know, batch of yardage. They're in Atlanta territory. Then, boom, ball gets punched out just as he's going down, recovered by the Falcons, killed the drive, man. It just was not New Orleans day today. You know, I mean, it was and it wasn't because, you know, watching the highlights, if they didn't have the score graphic at the bottom, you would never think that the Saints were losing this game. You would never think that they were losing, except for the lack of touchdown highlights in there, but you'd think that the way that they're just moving down the field, one play after the next, I mean, Atlanta really had no answer for the Saints from the 20 to the 20, you know, and it's remarkable. But to show you the kind of day it was encapsulated in the touchdown that basically put the game away for the Falcons. It's 14 to 12 because the Saints added yet another field goal from their kicker, Groupie is his name. Ridder is under pressure, heaves one as he's, you know, falling onto his back foot. And honestly, on the highlight, to look at it, it looks like he's throwing the ball away. My knee-jerk reaction is he's throwing it away. And instead, he throws a dime to a wide-open Bijan Robinson, who catches it and runs it in for a 26-yard touchdown to make it 21-12. And that was pretty much it. The Saints add a fifth field goal. The Falcons pile one of their own from Yongwei Koo on top of that. You got your final score 24-15 in favor of the Falcons. Now, this is one that I'm upset about because I'm pretty sure that I picked the Falcons to start, and I changed a couple of my picks, and I don't remember which ones that I did, but I think it's like the ones that I changed, I got one right and I got one wrong. So either way, it kind of evens itself out because I went from the Falcons to the Saints, and I went from the Bucks to the Colts. So I got the Colts pick right. I got the Saints pick wrong. So, yeah. Thanks a lot, New Orleans. Just remember that in order to win the game, you got to actually get into the end zone from time to time. So appreciate it. Jacksonville at Houston. This game was a lot of fun, man. You know, I was kind of making fun of it during the preview episode, thinking like, who the hell would have thought a Week 12 matchup between the Jags and the Texans would be for first place, that it would have anything to do with, you know, playoff implications or anything like that. And this was the game that I ended up watching the most, almost pretty much from start to finish. You know, I flipped back and forth to see what other games were happening with the checked in on the Saints and the Falcons, checked in on the Steelers and the Bengals and, you know, and things like that. But this is mostly the game that I stuck with today. And I just got to say, you got to give a lot of credit to the Jacksonville defense in general, but more specifically to the secondary of the Jacksonville Jaguars. There were several times during this game where C.J. Stroud reminded me a lot of another former Ohio State quarterback in Justin Fields, as he just held on to the ball. Like, he just would not give up on the play and throw the ball away or run or anything like that. He was really just waiting for somebody to get open. His offensive line was blocking its ass off, and he was back there for an obscene amount of time with nowhere to throw the ball. And this happened many, many times, resulted in Stroud getting sacked four times. And, you know, but sometimes he did pull off the hero ball, found a guy downfield for a 20-yard gain or anything like that, because he wasn't short on the yards. 26-36 for 304 and two touchdowns, no picks. So he stayed clean again as far as that goes. But, man, the Texans need a running game. They need a running game bad, because if it wasn't for Stroud actually scrambling six times for 47 yards, the rest of the offense, the rest of their Singletary and Damian Pierce ran for 32 yards on 11 carries, so a little less than 3 yards a carry, not great. And then Tank Dell ran reverse for 12 yards, so altogether 44 yards between everyone who isn't C.J. Stroud was the total of the rushing yards that the Texans gained / Jaguars gave up. If they can get a running game going, and unfortunately they don't have a first-round pick, but maybe they'll be able to find somebody in the second round that can be a solid running back for them. Maybe they can find someone in free agency, but they really got to get that running game going. That's going to be their death knell if they make the playoffs, because right now, with the spoiler alert, they lose this game to Jacksonville, they're out of the playoffs now. It's like before, they were a threat to be in charge of this division and, you know, be like the, you know, to be a division champ and host a playoff game. Now they're on the outside looking in. And I have faith that they could probably be one of that seventh playoff team in there. But, you know, I don't think they'll last very long in the playoffs. If it's all going to be C.J. Stroud, you're going to be looking at a lot of games. Because I think what Jacksonville did today was kind of lay out the blueprint on how to at least – slowed the Texans down because they didn't blitz. They didn't send the house after him, which in its own way is kind of frustrating. But C.J. Stroud is so good and so cool in the pocket that you're just leaving yourself open to him finding that hot route or that hot receiver or that guy that you left open so that you could send an extra guy. So they're going to come with three, come with four. They're going to sit back in coverage and make C.J. Stroud beat you. You know, when you're basically you're daring him to throw. And granted, he got 304 yards and two touchdowns today, but it wasn't enough for the Texans to get the win. You know, Jacksonville also kept from making the mistakes that cost them the game the first time around. Remember, they had that accidental flubbed kick turned into an 85-yard kick return from their fullback in that game and everything. There was one interception that actually shouldn't have been an interception from Trevor Lawrence because Evan Engram was held on the play. So it should have been defensive holding at the very least, if not pass interference. That ended up getting picked off. But outside of that, the Jaguars avoided all the mistakes that absolutely killed them in their Week 3 matchup with the Texans in Jacksonville. And despite the offensive line losing their left tackle and Cam Robinson for the game with a knee injury, I believe, so that could be a long-term injury for them, the offensive line kept Lawrence clean. He did not get sacked in this game. So, I mean, it was a fun back-and-forth game. It was a really fun game to watch. And as the international uniform snob that you guys all know me to be, I didn't hate the all reds for the Texans. It worked. I didn't think I'd be a fan when I heard that's what they were doing. But it worked. It worked. I didn't like it because they wore the red helmets like 2 weeks ago. And they wore one of their alternative jerseys, but they wore it like their standard jersey, their standard uniform. Obviously, they had the navy blue helmet with the bull on the side. The navy head to toe, in most cases, I prefer it to be navy and white, but the navy jersey, white numbers, red trim. The alternative jersey was navy jersey, white trim, red numbers with the red helmet. I didn't like it. Not a fan. And then I heard they were wearing all reds, head to toe, almost like a color rush kind of thing. I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. You know what? The funny thing is I didn't like it with the blue helmet, but I did like it with the all reds. I don't know. Call me crazy. It was a lot of red, but it actually, it worked. It worked for me. So, but anyway, you know, like I said, exciting game. The Jacksonville had the lead 24-21. Texans went on a drive at the end of the game there. Started at their own 11-yard line. They've got 3 minutes to go. You know, they're down a field goal. They were down 24-14. Scored a touchdown earlier in the fourth quarter. Forced a punt from Jacksonville. They're starting at their own 11. First play, Stroud to or Stroud scrambles. And there was a penalty on Jacksonville. Add 5 yards to the end of the run. Now out there at the 32. Yard line. They're moving, chunking, getting the ball down the field. They get all the way to the Jacksonville 39-yard line. It's 4th and 12. They have to settle for the field goal, and that's the more high-percentage move, but it was a 58-yard kick for Amendola, their kicker, and it hit the front of the crossbar. So that's rough, you know, if they'd have been able to, and they were, it was an incomplete pass on 3rd and 12. So even if they get that, whatever short amount of yardage that would have been, it would have been enough for the kicker because he hit the front of the crossbar, which means if that thing is a yard closer, if it's a 57-yard kick instead of a 58-yard kick, it's good. It's good. You know, it that's how close it was to going to overtime. But instead, it hits the front of the crossbar. The Texans come up short. The Jags move to 8-3. And in that moment, at the end of the early games today, Jacksonville was the number one seed in the AFC. They ended up, you know, surrendering that to the Chiefs when they beat the Raiders in the afternoon games. But for that single moment, If the season were to end in that moment, the Jags would have had home field and a bye week for the AFC playoffs. What a crazy season this has been. But unfortunately, I thought the Texans were red hot. I thought they would be able to take this and take the lead in the South, but and they came up just short. They almost pulled it off, but almost wasn't good enough. Cleveland at Seattle as we get into the afternoon games on Sunday. It was actually, this was another pick that I changed. I initially picked the Browns just because DTR was good enough this past last Sunday, along with the defense, were good enough to get past the Steelers. But it's like as we were going along, I don't know. I guess it was, you know, starting to like Denzel Ward wasn't going to play. There was somebody else that was just like, I was kind of iffy on Cleveland doing this because Denver's playing really, really good football right now. Sean Payton's really got things turned around, you know, to go from 1-4 to be 5-5 coming into this one. So, and, you know, and Denver's at home. And, you know, despite it all, Denver's really tough in Denver. So I ended up changing my pick to the Broncos. Lucky for me. Because at the end of this game, it was very clear that the Broncos were the right choice. You know, and the offense never really got anything going with DTR today. And he ended up getting knocked out of the game in the, was it either the late third or early fourth quarter, somewhere in that area. And then PJ Walker not able to be the hero for the Browns in this one. But it kind of started right away. You could just tell the Browns go 3-and-out, and the Broncos go right down the field. 9 plays, 80 yards. They got some help from a pass interference call on Greg Newsom. Got the ball into Cleveland territory. Finished it up a few plays later with a Samaje Perine 3-yard touchdown run. Make it 7-0. And then on the ensuing drive, Cleveland's moving it along and then fumbles it when they try to run one of those plays. You've seen the Bears run it a few times where Cole Kmet, our tight end, gets under the center and then he's the one that takes the snap and then goes forward, tries to push the pile, you know, an offset of the tush push, the brotherly shove that the Eagles run so well. And they fumble the snap. They fumble the snap, and the Broncos recover it. Ends up being no harm, no foul, because 4 plays later, the Broncos fumble it back to the Browns, but they do nothing with it, give the ball right back to the Broncos, you know, in a 3-and-out situation. And then the Broncos go on a 13-play, 80-yard drive, lasts nearly 6 minutes, polished off with a 2-yard run for Russell Wilson to make it 14-0. So, you know, and then the same thing happened again. Or excuse me, the Browns finally put a decent drive together, but it stalled out in Denver territory. Had to settle for a field goal. Then, as I jotted down in my notes, same thing happened again at the end of the second quarter to make it 14-6 at halftime. The Browns put 13 plays, 57 yards, 5 minutes for the first field goal. 11 plays, 67 yards, two minutes, 42 seconds to settle for the second field goal. First drive ended at the Denver 18. Second drive, the Denver 6. So they got inside the 10, couldn't punch it in. You know, it was kind of like the Saints who were just, you know, marching down the field at will for most of the ball game. Had to settle for field goals half the way. And then things got exciting to start the second half. The Broncos go 3-and-out on their opening drive, and then the Browns finally put a touchdown drive together. A really good-looking drive, too. 13 plays, 79 yards. DTR's throwing the ball really well, and, you know, it looks like they've got something going. Robinson hits Bryant, the tight end that fumbled the snap earlier in the ballgame, finds him from a 2-yard touchdown to make it 14-12. They go for a two-pointer to tie it, but Amari Cooper drops the two-point pass. He dropped it. So 14-12, okay. Denver kicks a field goal, makes it 17-12. Then the Browns, they just fall apart from there. They fumble the ball back to the Broncos. Why do I keep forgetting who they're playing? Good God. They fumble it back to the Broncos. Am I getting old, like, literally in real time here in the show? Jesus. They fumble the ball back to the Broncos, and it was after DTR had gotten hurt. He got hurt on, like, the first play, third play, third down. Here it is. I'm looking at the play-by-play. Third play of that drive, gets absolutely hammered on the play. It gets flagged for roughing the passer, Browning for the Broncos. And I thought it was a good hit. I thought it was a hard hit for sure, one that I'm not surprised that DTR ended up getting hurt from. But there was no helmet-to-helmet contact. He wasn't leading with the helmet. It was a shoulder right into his chest, right into the sternum. So it was like, I wasn't surprised at all that DTR needed a minute to get up. I'm not all that surprised to hear that he didn't finish the game after a hit like that, because he literally, like, was in the air when he gets hit, because he jumped up in the air to throw the ball, gets blasted in the chest. Good clean hit in my opinion, and I played offense, so I usually almost always side with the offensive players, but looked like a good clean hit to me. He gets flagged for it. It extends the drive, but literally like two plays later, the Browns try to run a reverse type play. It was like a wildcat type play because PJ Walker wasn't the guy that caught the snap. Elijah Moore fumbles it as he's getting the handoff. It gets recovered. First of all, if Cleveland recovers it, they lose 20 yards on the play. But instead, it ended up being essentially a 20-yard gain for the Denver defense because it was recovered by DeJuan Jones at the Cleveland 20-yard line. A few plays later, Russell Wilson scrambles to keep a play alive. Very much like DTR did on the play that he got hurt. He wouldn't let the play die. He just had to. I think the guy was just desperate to get something going. They were only down, 17-12 at that point. A touchdown, they take the lead, and all that kind of stuff. But end up getting hurt on the play, and then same thing. Russell Wilson breaks the pocket. He's scrambling. He's eluding the defense, but he's safe. He's nowhere near getting hurt. Finds Adam Trautman in the end zone. And initially it was waved off as incomplete because he was really close to the sideline. But Denver challenges it. Turns out Trautman was in bounds, or actually his knee. There was a little bit of green space between his knee and the sideline, which meant it was a touchdown, 24-12. That was pretty much the ball game right there. The Browns couldn't get anything going with P.J. Walker at quarterback. The Broncos add another field goal later on in the fourth quarter, and then they cap off the night with the Broncos punted them deep into their own territory. The Browns started at their own 5. Three plays later, P.J. Walker gets sacked in the end zone by Zach Allen for a safety, and there's your final score, 29-12. Turns out that's a scoreigami. Score. First time in NFL history a game has ended 29-12. The Broncos coming out on top, and I successfully changed my pick from the Browns to the Broncos. So kudos to me for getting this one right. Final game of the pick six, or at least the final one we'll be able to talk about on this episode, Buffalo at Philadelphia. And regardless of the outcome of the game for the Buffalo Bills, who unfortunately, spoiler alert, came up short in this one, I'll say this. I do believe that the Bills have their offensive coordinator, because after being an offense that it took, 7 weeks to score more than 25 points when they put up 32 on the Jets last weekend, in a losing effort, they put up 34 against the Eagles, a much better team than the New York Jets, or at least a much more complete team. We can argue about whether or not Philly's defense is better than the Jets. But, you know, because that really is a context thing. I think if the Jets had Philly's offense, the Jets might be undefeated. That defense is really good. They gave Miami fits on Friday. That was really something. And still, Miami still ended up with 31 points and all that kind of stuff. It was quite the mess. But, yeah. But even in a losing effort, they scored 34 points. The offense pretty much did what it wanted in this game. And unlike the Saints, they were putting it in the end zone. They really put it on the Eagles to basically come and get them in this one. You know, the Bills were just outright dangerous on offense pretty much all day. From the start of the game, they were much better on offense in the first half than Philly was. And especially in the second half when they were just trading scores there at the end of the game. So, you know, Josh Allen was otherworldly in this one. He was absolutely fantastic in this game. I mean, I've always been a fan of his, and, you know, 339 yards, 2 touchdown passes, 9 carries for 81 yards and 2 touchdown runs in this one. He was basically just willing the Bills into the, you know, into doing whatever they wanted in the first half. You know, they started off with a field goal. They started out with the Eagles that scored first, and they went up 7-0 and then got shut out for the rest of the half. After that, the Bills added a field goal later on. You know, as I put in my notes, Allen was just willing the offense along in the first half. That's exactly right. You know, they the Bills turned a pass that was batted into the air from Jalen Hurts. That was, you know, and Hurts' only interception of the game, but they turned that into a touchdown run by Josh Allen to take an early lead, 10-7. Then the Eagles later in the second quarter flub a quarterback running back exchange. I mean, the play was doomed from the start because I believe the Bills had like a run blitz going, and there was a defender immediately in the backfield. And instead of Hurts hanging on to, I think that's what the mistake was that Hurts was trying to give it to the running back, and the running back was like, "Well, this play is toast. You should hang on to it." And Hurts just dropped the ball on the ground because the running back wasn't going to take it because he could see the defender coming. He was going to block the defender. Hurts goes to hand it off to him, basically drops it on the ground. Buffalo recovers. And then a few plays later, Allen finds Stephon Diggs right on the goal line. He literally landed on the goal line, which is a touchdown, made it 17-7 for the Bills at the half. So the only thing that went wrong for the Bills was that their kicker, Bass, missed the field goal in the first half, and then he missed another one. Actually, he got that one blocked in the second quarter. And it was like right inside of 2 minutes, too. He missed that field goal before they scored the touchdown, actually. It's like they got that field goal blocked. Then that was the drive where the Eagles fumbled. The Bills get it right back, put it in the end zone this time. So, yeah, crazy. That ended up being a blessing in disguise because it had the Eagles deep in their own territory. They make that mistake. The Bills capitalize, make it a 17-7 ball game. But he did miss one in the third quarter from 48 yards out that obviously those two field goals would have made all the difference in the world in this game. But the Eagles answer with a good drive after that missed field goal to make it 17-14. And so check this out. This is how the second half went. After the missed field goal from Buffalo. So then it was touchdown, Philly touchdown, Bills touchdown, Philly touchdown, interception from the Bills. So Allen extends that interception streak. He's now thrown 9 picks in 8 games in a row now, which Philly then in turn turns into a touchdown to make it their first lead of the game at 28-24. Now they scored with 11 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And I mean, it's just, it was so, the game was so back and forth, and I actually missed the chunk of the game because we were eating dinner. From the, like, pretty much the entire third quarter, we were eating dinner. Because when we went to eat, it was 17-14. Actually, it was 24 to 14. When the Bills scored that first touchdown drive. Actually, then they missed the field goal. Philly scores, make it 17-14. Then they march right down the field. 9 plays, 70 yards. Found another touchdown scramble. Another touchdown scramble from Allen. And it was 3rd and 11. He's basically scrambling to keep the play alive, trying to get as many yards as he can. Ends up running it all in himself. You know, turned a 3rd down conversion into a touchdown run. And it was just, you know, like, man. And so it's like after that, we go and eat dinner. I come back. It's 28-24. So the Eagles scored twice while we were eating dinner. So I didn't know about the interception until I watched the highlights again afterwards. And because I knew that I missed that chunk in the third quarter. And it was, you know, like I said, just back and forth. The Eagles answered with a touchdown run or another touchdown pass, this time to Devontae Smith to make it 24-21. And then I said, you know, the Allen, extending his streak. It was James Bradbury that picked him off, and probably pissed him off too. Then Hurt found Zacchaeus, the wide receiver, for a 29-yard touchdown, where he just kind of hung it up. It was 3rd and 15. He's rolling out to his left, which is never easy for a right-handed quarterback. Heaves it into the end zone. Double coverage. Zacchaeus just jumps up, catches the ball, comes down with it. Bang, 28-24. Just like that. I mean, this and the Phillies going crazy. They're wearing the Kelly green, so it's an old school Eagles look. I love that old uniform of theirs. They exchange punts, and then starting with the football, 7 minutes to go in the game at their own 26. The Bills go on a 10-play, 74-yard drive to take the lead with a minute and 52 to go. And that was it. What was so impressive about this drive is that it was all runs, basically. It was run, you know, they were running the football right down Philly's throat. And you could really kind of feel, I was like, man, is the tide turning here? Because, like, I know that Philly's winning right now. But it just seems like, you know, when you run on a team like that, and they're running up the middle, it's not like they were just doing weird, you know, misdirections and stuff like that. It's like they were handing it off to the running back. He was pounding it right down the middle of the defense. 6 yards here, 7 yards here. They had 3 plays up the middle in a row for 10 yards apiece on this drive. And then the comedy in that is that, of course, it was capped off by a touchdown pass from Josh Allen to Gabe Davis to make it 31-28. And then showing why they are regarded as the best team in the league right now, why they have the best record in the league right now. Philly goes 9 plays, only gains 34 yards. You know, as good as the drive was going, they were only able to get from their own 25 to the Buffalo 41, which set up Jake Elliott, their kicker, for a 59-yard kick, and it was just good. You know, it very much reminded me a lot of, if you guys see that snow game, the Tuck Rule game between the Patriots and the Raiders, that blistering snowstorm that was taking place. Adam Vinatieri kicks a field goal in the blizzard snow that was happening, but that kick was probably never more than 10 feet off the ground, and it very much looked like that to me because it had plenty of leg. It made it just far, but it wasn't one of those high arching kicks. He very much kicked it for distance and, you know, just basically kicked a straight line where there was at least a 50-50 shot that gets blocked at the line of scrimmage. Like, that's how low the angle was when he kicked it. But it was long enough, and we went to overtime. The place is going crazy. Has Philadelphia stolen the momentum back? And then what I was really, really impressed about was on Buffalo's drive, they got the ball first in overtime. They're driving it down the field. They put up a graphic that at that point, I don't remember how many plays came after, but at that point in the drive, Buffalo had run 91 offensive plays in this football game. And somehow, the entire Philly defense wasn't dead on the sidelines from exhaustion. I mean, I'm sure those boys are feeling it now because we're about, what, 5 hours removed, 4 hours removed from that game being over with. I'm sure they're all feeling it now, but 91 plays. that defense was on the field. And there were several plays after this as well. So, I mean, it was just an enormous amount of football that those poor bastards were on the field for today. And yet, somehow, they're still in the game. It's still tied, you know, in overtime. 92 plays. So there was one more play after that. I was wrong. 505 yards of total offense for the Bills. 13 of 22 on third down. 13 of 22. That is bananas. The, you know, Philly was 4 of 11. That's like normal. But 13 of 22, which, that, I mean, that just makes all the sense in the world after you hear about 90-plus plays being run. It's like Philly just could not get themselves off the field at times. And a lot of that was Josh Allen scrambling for first downs and things like that. So 173 yards rushing, 332 yards passing. One thing that was really surprising about the first half and how well it went for Buffalo is they had 10 penalties against them in the first half. When Jim Nantz mentioned that's the 10th penalty today, I thought he was talking about combined between the two teams in the first half. No, it was actually 11 penalties combined, 10 against the Bills, one against the Eagles, and somehow they only had one penalty for the entire second half. Yeah, talk about cleaning things up. Or maybe the referees just finally gave him a break. I don't know. But they march right down the field in overtime. Josh Allen on third down. It was one of those choice routes. And Josh Allen thought Gabe Davis was going to go to the inside. Gabe Davis went to the outside to do kind of like a post corner to the corner of the end zone. Miscommunication. Ball falls innocently to the ground. He was wide open. It would have been a touchdown if they were on the same page, but unfortunately they weren't. They settled for the field goal. And then in total opposition of that drive that the Bills had, where they ran the ball, and then threw a touchdown pass at the end of regulation, this time the Eagles passed their way down the field and then capped it off on a Jalen Hurts quarterback keeper for the walk-off touchdown to take the win, 37-34, to improve to 10-1 to win the game. Unfortunately, man, the Bills are 6-6 now. They're definitely in the hunt as far as those playoff graphics and everything go. So they're on the outside looking in. They finally, for a team that's been as beat up as they have been, finally get their bye in Week 13 along with the Bears and a few other teams this week, or next week, I should say. But they got 2 weeks to get ready for the Chiefs, so they got to go ahead and do this all again in a couple of weeks. Hopefully, it will be enough for them to maybe pull off some kind of upset, keep themselves alive, because if this is what the Bills are going to look like for the last 6-7 games, this is definitely a team I want to see in the postseason. And they've had pretty decent luck against the Chiefs in the regular season, so maybe, you know, not this Sunday, but the following Sunday will be the start of something for them. They can go on a run, get themselves into the playoffs, but we'll see. It's going to be rough in the AFC to pull that off, but if their offense keeps playing like that, they just need to get another stop or two out of their defense, and they're going to be a team to contend with. But like I said at the start of this, at the very least, I'm fairly certain that Joe Brady is the offensive play caller for the foreseeable future for the Bills. So but, I made the pick for the Eagles. They made me very, very nervous at times, but in the end, they came through for me and got me the pick. So there you got it, guys. The Sunday night game is wrapped up, and the Ravens have beaten the San Diego Chargers, as I predicted that they would. So fantastic. And the final score was 22-10. So, hey, there you go. Now the Ravens are back as the number one seed in the AFC, because their 9-3 is better than KC and Jacksonville at 8-3. So Baltimore's back on top. So let's go ahead and get them folded in and close this thing out with the all-out blitz and wrap up what's left of week number 12. All-out blitz for week number 12. We start in Thanksgiving morning for the Packers and the Lions, and for the second time in 4 days, the Lions let their opponent jump out to an early lead. But unlike Sunday against my Bears, their late game heroics were not enough, as Jordan Love and the Packers were too much for the Lions, 29-22, to kick off the Thanksgiving games. Washington at Dallas, the mid-game for Thanksgiving. Dak Prescott went 22 of 32 for 331 yards and four touchdowns. But Sam Howell threw for 300 yards himself, but Washington's 10 points were nowhere near as enough as the Cowboys blew them out of the water, 45-10. Black Friday, the Dolphins at the Jets. Here's how bad a day it was for the New York Jets. They didn't convert a third down until the fourth quarter, and a Hail Mary attempt before halftime turned into a 99-yard pick six for Miami as the Dolphins roll over the Jets. Pittsburgh at Cincinnati in their first game without Matt Canada. The Steelers gained over 400 yards for the first time in 58 games, but they only scored 16 points. Thankfully, they were playing a Joe Burrow-less Cincinnati Vikings squad, so 16 points was enough in a 16-10 win for the Steelers. Carolina at Tennessee. Two Derrick Henry first-half TDs were all the offense needed by the Titans on Sunday as their defense sacked Bryce Young four times and held the Panthers to 10 points in the Titans' 17-10 win over Carolina. A key fourth down conversion, Tampa Bay at Indianapolis, from Gardner Minshew to Mo Alie-Cox, led to Jonathan Taylor's second touchdown run of the day. Turned out to be more than enough for the Colts to get him past the Buccaneers, 27-20 in Indianapolis. New England at the Giants. Mac Jones actually beat out Bailey Zappe in practice to keep his starting job this week, but the results were exactly the same as the Pats' offense. Despite outgaining the Giants, only mustered 7 points and lost again, 10-7 to the Giants. L.A. Rams at the Cardinals. Matt Stafford went 25 of 33 for 229 and four touchdowns. Meanwhile, the Rams' defense held the Cardinals to 73 yards rushing and dominated in a 37-14 win over Arizona. Kansas City at Las Vegas. The Raiders got off to a 14-0 lead that included a 63-yard touchdown run by Josh Jacobs. But on the heels of two touchdown passes from Mahomes and two TD runs by Pacheco, the Chiefs went on a 31-3 run to win easily, 31-17. And finally, on Sunday Night Football, the Baltimore defense forced four turnovers that kept the Chargers from getting anything going on offense. Rookie Zay Flowers had a touchdown catch in the second quarter and a 37-yard touchdown run in the fourth to seal the win for the Ravens, who led the entire way 20-10. And there you go, guys. That is the all-out blitz for week number 12. I will obviously fold my review of the Bears-Vikings game into the Bears-Vikings review show. Keep your eyes on the social media, BTU_Larry on Instagram and on X or Twitter or whatever you're calling it these days, to find out when exactly that episode is going to drop. You can also join the Facebook group on Facebook. Just search Bears Talk Underground, so you guys, because that thing could be dropping anywhere from as early as Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday night, or maybe even push it to Wednesday morning. So keep your eyes open for that, to know when the Bears Vikings review episode will drop. And I'm gonna go get some sleep and get my beauty rest so I can be ready for all the energy that I got in me to give it all to Kiss one last time when they play for us tomorrow at the Allstate Arena in Chicago. So come back on anywhere from Tuesday afternoon to Wednesday morning for the Bears Vikings review episode. And until then, my name is Larry D. This has been the Fourth Phase, and we will see you next time.